Charaja Astatara Sata Si Sri Madhya Divine Grace Si Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Nantarachi Mad Bhagavatam Ki Or Pimanandi. Those of you that like to look up the verse, Canto 3, Chapter 13, Text 49. 3:13:49 and 50. This is the concluding portion of the appearance of Lord Varaha. And Maitreya is making some summary statements. Maitreya, in this third and into the fourth canto, Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, and he's been responding to questions towards the beginning portion of this canto, including the structure of the universe and sarga and visarga. How does all of this happen? So one of the narrations includes the appearance of the personality of Godhead, Lord Varaha, when Hiranyaksha is disturbing Lord Vishnu's arrangements for living entities. There's details. But the earth has fallen out of orbit into the Garbhadak ocean. The demigods went to Lord Vishnu hell, and Lord Vishnu appeared from the nostril of Brahma and grew very big and plunged into the Garbhadak ocean and lifted the earth on his tusks. Hiranyaksha challenged him, big battle. Hiranyaksha was finished. The sages, seeing this form, sages meaning not just on earth planet, but specifically it's mentioned in the verses, it's Maharloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka, have offered prayers to Lord Vishnu in this form. And, you know, there's not just prayers, but there's detailed teachings about Vedic cosmology and Sambandha Gyan and so many things. So the Lord has now placed the earth back in its proper position. Actually, it leaves it floating on the Garbhadak ocean, and then it goes back. So then he disappears. He goes back to his abode. And Maitreya has finished the narration. So that's where we are. I'll read the previous two, 46, 47, 48, and then, so just get a context. The sage Maitreya said, "The Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. In this manner, the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat on the water, he returned to his own abode. If one hears and describes in the devotional service attitude this auspicious narration of Lord Bhur, which is worthy of description, the Lord, who is within the heart of everyone, is very pleased." And then, text 49. "Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with someone. By transcendental achievement, one understands everything else to be insignificant. One who engages in transcendental loving service is elevated to the highest perfectional stage by the Lord Himself, who is seated in everyone's heart. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, the Lord gives intelligence to the pure devotees so that they may be elevated to the highest perfectional stage. It is confirmed herein that a pure devotee who constantly engages in the loving service of the Lord is awarded all knowledge necessary to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For such a devotee, there is nothing valuable to achieve but the Lord's service. If one serves faithfully, there is no possibility of frustration because the Lord Himself takes charge of the devotee's advancement. The Lord is seated in everyone's heart, and He knows the devotee's motive and arranges everything achievable. In other words, the pseudo-devotee who is anxious to achieve material gains cannot attain the highest perfectional stage because the Lord is in knowledge of his motive. One merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then the Lord is there to help in every way. And then the concluding text, 50. Who, other than one who is not a human being, can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the Personality of Godhead's activities, which, by itself, that's the narrations, by themselves, can deliver one from all material pangs. Oh, this is the nectar. Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the Personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? And purport, final purport of the chapter. The narration of the activities of the Personality of Godhead. The narration of the activities of the Personality of Godhead is like a constant flow of nectar. No one can refuse to drink such nectar except one who is not a human being. Devotional service to the Lord is the highest goal of life for every human being, and such devotional service begins by hearing about the transcendental activities of the Personality of Godhead. Only an animal, or a man who is almost an animal in behavior, can refuse to take an interest in hearing the transcendental message of the Lord. There are many books of stories and histories in the world, but except for the histories or narrations on the topics of the Personality of Godhead, none are capable of diminishing the burden of material pangs. Therefore, one who is serious about eliminating material existence must chant and hear of the transcendental activities of the Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, one must be compared to the non-humans. That's the end of the chapter. Both these verses are repeating themes within the Bhagavatam. Particularly the first one, of course everything is practical, but particularly the first one is practical in terms of navigating our way through material existence, because material existence is awarded to living entities who want it. At least wanting enjoyment separate from Krishna, wanting to be the enjoyer of the temporary, and so it's natural because of wanting, here we are, and because of wanting, there's so many desires that are acting now and soon to be through the time factor prompted and elevated and become important to us, and that's we're not only conditioned by or habituated to what we're addicted to. That mentality is addicting. And we can't get enough of it, and even if we try to put the brake pedal on, it's only for a little while. It only slows the machine down, but it doesn't end material existence, and it doesn't end the struggle. Seeking happiness where we don't belong, or where there's no real happiness. One of the topics I was asked to speak at a university, University of Illinois in Chicago, the happiness choice. And it's really easy to talk about that topic and say bad things about, you know, the material happiness choice. However, if there isn't an understanding of what real happiness is, and a conviction that there is such a thing, this happiness, this absolute happiness, then are you going to make that choice? You can just trash the bad one, but then it'll just pop up again in some other form, or some other form, or some other form, because that's the soul's conditioning to know what to do. We know from Rupa Goswami what not to do, as well as what to do. We don't Hari Sambandha Vastuna, those things that have relationship with Hari, we don't reject them. So then we have this Prabhupada's phrase, razor's edge. Razor's edge is we accept this is my position. I have a body and I have a mind. And the body has these needs or demands. The mind has these needs or demands. And the intelligence is trying to take care of those needs and demands. And that's our material condition. Now what? We connect those things as offerings to the personality of Godhead. That's the Karma Yoga principle. You work with detachment from the fruits of work, so that is, you know, you go to school, you go to work, or you get married, or you have a family, and you do things that are of this world, that the razor's edge is to do them without being entangled and identifying with and attached to. It's so easy to be attached to that which is the source of misery. Attached to in the mood of being the enjoyer. That's the material happiness choice. And it's, you know, it's very strong. Even if you're a nice devotee, it's very strong. Trying to be the enjoyer of. So, the message is it's not required to trash those things, to trash talk those things, or to trash those things. It's necessary to align those things with the personality of Godhead. So how does that aligning awaken, or wanting to please the personality of Godhead, for starters? How does that awaken? It comes from sound, our chanting and hearing, cleansing, awakening of our dormant spiritual consciousness, our dormant propensity to be in a relationship with Krishna, pleasing Krishna, even in the conditioned stage where we still have material desires. Material desires means desires separate from. So even while in that having separate from desires, the competing desire, the light that pushes away the darkness or dispels the darkness, is the desire to please Krishna. And there's this battle in the mind or in the heart or in the seat of consciousness. This way, that way, this way, that way. So, and you know, sometimes and sometimes. Sometimes the serving Krishna spirit is stronger, sometimes the material desire, enjoyment, separate desire is stronger. And with that, Maya covers. We can't see who we are, we can't see who Krishna is, we can't see what reality is, we can't see what work is, we can't even see that our desires are separate from Krishna, we just are moved by that force, the illusory energy force, and pure consciousness is covered. We go back and forth. You see, that the unsteady bhakti is like that. Therefore, you know, the remedy. Regularly hear. Regularly associate. Regularly worship. This is the practicing stage, this Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti stage. We just stay there with faith that the potency of that process is very significant. Now, going back to the previous verse, Maitreya said, the Lord is situated in the heart. And the Lord sees that effort. Of course, he sees the mix, but he sees the effort. And he extends himself when he sees we're extending ourselves to him. However intermittent or however weak the signal is, he's got his receiver on and he receives the signal and he understands. So text 48. If one hears and describes in a devotional service attitude this auspicious narration of Lord Bor, which is worthy of description, the Lord, who is situated within the heart of everyone, is very pleased. So while we're seated here, coming from wherever we're coming from to come together to hear, we should know, as we're doing this, or the byproduct, or the consequence, or the outcome of our doing this is the Lord situated within our hearts is pleased by that effort and that submission and that hearing his glories. And then this next verse, 49, is when he's pleased, what cannot be accomplished? It doesn't specifically say, you know, trash your aspirations. It's, they can then be fulfilled, so it's not like a trade-off, I'll do this and he'll do that. It's not a business deal. It's purifying the mood of being the separate enjoyer of, you know, it's like Dhruva, he got his kingdom at a time when he didn't need his kingdom. His was beyond that desire, but he was awarded that kingdom. He was awarded the kingdom of his father, then he was awarded the Dhruva Loka. Similar, not identical, but similar position of Prahlad, saying I don't want, and then shortly thereafter he says, one who doesn't want then becomes capable of receiving opulences of the kingdom of God and not being disturbed by it. That is to say, there's intelligence given. In the Dhruva narration, specifically, we discussed the position of Sudama Brahman. Sudama Dipra, the classmate of Krishna, who lived not far from Dwarka, went to see Krishna in Dwarka. And on his way back, but there's commentary where Jiva Goswami explains the Lord didn't ask Sudama why he had come, because he would have then given him all opulence. And the Lord then knows better why. That people who have opulence, prosperity and the fruits of piety, generally fall into the position of being the enjoyer of those things. So kingdom and, you know, incredible opulence, generally, you know, it's fine to many kings. That position is rarely achieved. Now, that, you know, for the devotee, we don't find devotees in those positions so much. Commentary says, of course, in Vedic times, then one can. So then, Jiva Goswami poses the question, well, wait a minute. Great devotees, Ambarish, Prahlad, Dhruva, they achieve great opulence, and then it's embedded within the verse, which is right here also. 10:10 Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives intelligence to those persons, so when they have the opulence, their intelligence protects them from the error, once again, of being the enjoyer, becoming proud, and so forth. But supposing you don't have intelligence, any, the spiritual kind, not the material kind, not like you have the high IQ, sense gratifier enjoyers, because they know how to combine this and that, and they have the piety, and they prosper. But for the devotee, whatever prosperity we have, whatever good fortune we have, and whatever the other kind, you know, the paucity of prosperity, it's being monitored by the personality of Godhead. So what cannot be achieved for one who is regularly engaged in hearing with devotion the activities of the personality of Godhead, who is situated within the heart and become pleased by that, and the Lord is seated in everyone's heart, and he knows the devotee's motive and arranges everything achievable. In other words, the pseudo devotee was anxious to achieve material gains, cannot attain the highest perfectional stage because the Lord is in knowledge of his motive. One merely has to become sincere in his purpose. And then the Lord is there to help in every way. So it's a purification process because we're not there yet. And so there's this transition stage where it's like, it's uncomfortable to be in a transition stage where we're not fully materialists, we're not pure devotees. So we're in this transition stage. But so what we need to show the personality of Godhead is sincerity, purpose, or we want to come to the stage where this interest is our interest. In the car ride back from the university program, I read a letter from someone that's going through exactly this. So, you know, kids can go through it in school, or one can go through it in career, or one can go through it in terms of family, or one can... Here's somebody that's a working professional for 30-something years. They're very qualified, and they have to have some... In the medical field, you have to have re-qualifying exams. And they were doing great in those re-qualifying exams. And then this last one was like a total flop. And they're so there's always something. good fortune, ill fortune, there's always something, and we're the architects of those. So when that comes for the devotee, doesn't mean, oh, I'm a bad person, I'm getting by the fruit of my bad person deeds. Not like that. Some indication of something, but it can just be subtle attachment. And Krishna's helping, because he's very kind, the intention of this devotee is, you know, strong. At the same time, there's some not full shelter condition, and so Krishna's purifying him, giving him the opportunity, at least, because it's a free will choice, and I want to become purified or not. So it's he's looking at our purpose and looking to elevate. And the a nice example is gold. The process, I'm not so familiar, just read, the process of making gold purified is you melt it really hot, and then alloys that are in the gold separate out, and you scoop off the alloys and you just have pure gold. Now, the gold going through that melting process may be uncomfortable, but it's to get to the stage where alloys are removed. And so the life of devotion can sometimes be like that, because there's alloys, the things that don't belong there. So one can analyze in terms of sincerity of purpose. It's mentioned here is also faith, that's in the next, faithless persons. They don't have the faith in that hearing, so their attitude and aptitude are not the same in hearing. So they don't get the same result, pure devotional result. Or another way of looking at it is, strong tendencies that keep us as devotees in this bondage position, one may have to go through some ordeal to remove the bondage position tendency. That's another way of saying the same thing. So, a devotee, any one of us, might think, oh, I'm not so faithful, or oh, my motive is not so good, or, you know, oh, the lamentation thing. And the other is, there's Krishna's being very kind, and there, so if this is the faithful position, Krishna is very kind. He knows that I have some tendency that's over there, that's not for him tendency. And whatever that description might be, a combination of things, and Krishna's helping me overcome. So let me stay fixed on going through the purification, as, you know, as the ordeal is taking place. So I'll say it again. One can focus on what isn't there. One can focus on the mercy of Krishna that's helping me overcome the impediment that is there. No harm in recognizing, there's benefit in recognizing the shortcomings of tendencies, and go to the other side. You know, my motive, my faith, etc., isn't as strong as it could be, should be, as I want it to be. That's okay. Don't focus on the inert. Don't focus on the anartha, focus on the anartha vritti. Focus on the bhajana kriya, and you'll go to the other side of the anartha. And so the emphasis in this final verse is, one who doesn't have that faith and doesn't engage in this way has is unfortunate, and they're not yet at the human form of life stage. Because the human form of life, what is the human form of life meant for? It's meant for realizing who we are, and realizing who we are includes our relationship with the source of everything, our relationship with the personality of Godhead. That's our mission in life. That's our human mission. And if you're not seeing that and striving like that, then you're not human yet. So where are we? We're, you know, in this transition stage of becoming human. Accepting that in principle is the beginning of human life. So we're human. But we're not so steady and fixed, so it's not like we fall from the position of being human. It's just going forward with becoming fully human or fully realized, and then more intelligence is given by Supersoul to us how to reach Krishna in the different circumstances, the challenging ones and the good fortune ones, and not to be the enjoyer of the good fortune ones, nor unreasonably disturbed by the misfortune ones. Stay on track. That's intelligence that Supersoul gives to one who is engaged in this process and whose purpose, so this is the conclusion. One merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then the Lord is there to help in every way. Do well in school, you know, etc., etc., etc. For different stages and different ages. And it's not always going to be like you're going to be the best student in the class because, you know, you chanted your rounds. But that which is by Krishna's arrangement for each one of us, according to our capacity and so forth and so on, Krishna protects, Krishna provides. Yogakshema Vahamyaham. And then we just keep going forward with that conviction. And there's, you know, this interesting reciprocation that goes on with Krishna on a regular basis, like sometimes and sometimes. Sometimes there's abundance, and sometimes, like this one student was sharing with me, you know, they did terrible on an organic chemistry exam. Did they really study hard and spent five times what other people did that did really well, and they did really poorly? What are you going to do when that happens? And then, or when it seems to happen more than once. So you continue with the, my life is meant for Krishna's service. This is the particular phase or stage of my life where this is what my service to Krishna is about. And you just remain focused and depend on Krishna, and the result comes whatever Krishna gives. That's our life. In the practicing stage, and then come the perfectional stage. And the perfectional stage may have its difficulties and tribulations and so forth, but it's looked upon in a very different way than in the practice stage. Let's see if there's some discussion.
The sincerity of purpose, so it looks like I should not be doing the chanting, hearing, and the worshipping in a mechanical way, but with the intention of wanting a relationship with Krishna. Is that the sincerity portion of that?
Well, not necessarily. Yes, but not necessarily. For example, Prabhupada writes what you said, and then he says, however, householders have obligations, and sometimes they're obliged to go to the personality Godhead for helping them with their household obligations. But let it be, you know, with the intention that I want to get to the stage, and I'm not there. So it's the sincerity of purpose may be in that intermediate range, striving towards. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In Krishna consciousness, when chanting his rounds and he takes the Parinama initiation, he is in Kanishtha Adhikari stage. So what are the opportunities we look for to move forward to go to the next stage, or what opportunities Krishna will provide?
Well, why do you say, based upon this and this, one is in the Kanishtha Adhikari stage? What's the reason for speaking like that? Because that person may very well be a Madhyama. In fact, largely, Srila Prabhupada is introducing the Madhyama stage from the get-go. It, for example, preaching. And the Kanishtha sees the Lord is in the place of worship, the mosque, temple, synagogue, whatever. And there isn't the same appreciation for the hearing chanting process, and there isn't the same appreciation for the devotees of the Lord and the grades of devotees of the Lord, but then the Madhyama position recognizes these things. So I'm not sure the premise of your question is, you know, corresponds with these, for you, in this kind of Hare Krishna movement, how we're being trained to be situated. I shall I'll say it again. We're being trained from the get-go in the direction of the Madhyama position. So attainment of that is, there's Kanishtha Madhyama, Madhyama Madhyama, and Uttama Madhyama, but I'm responding to the premise of your question.
Why I'm asking is, Krishna looks the motive of the person when he is in that state, so it is a reciprocates to him or no?
Is there?
Krishna reciprocates to him?
Of course. You know, there's, for us, practically, Prabhupada's books, in recorded lectures, sadhu sangha, opportunities for worship, opportunities for service, prepare prasadam, distribute prasadam, receive, you know, so there's so many prompts to go further and further. And we may have our favorite ones, and that's fine. And we do those favorite ones, and we get, so, and then we become qualified to go further by that opportunity that's being given to us. Of all the things, most important is chanting. And according to Bhakti Siddhanta, chanting implies hearing of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, as much as, this is his position, as much as we don't worship Krishna alone, we worship Radha Krishna. So we don't just chant Krishna's name alone, we also hear from scripture, because that's the Swarup Shakti of the Lord. So when we say chanting, it implies the other. is the most important, hearing and chanting. And those are the primary, and then there's corollary that comes from the primary opportunities for going further. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
My question is that I have a desire to take more responsibility and do more service, but there is always something that comes around.
Always something that what?
Something or the other, material stuff, the job situation.
Impediments in doing so.
Impediments in doing so. And so here, it talks about the faith and also the sincerity. I don't know if it's because that I'm somewhere, it's the enjoyment spirit that's blocking me, or I mean, I'm trying to see if I'm really sincere or not, I don't know.
Oh. If there's consistency in the sincere effort, then it's sincere. Supposing somebody has chronic health problem. Now, is that due to the fact that they're not sincere? So, back to your, you wish to increase, and there's always some impediment. Does that mean you're not sincere in purpose? Well, one of the tests is that sincere purpose there, and when the impediments subside, is that sincere purpose still there, and you find some way, Krishna gives some way. But, sincerity of purpose is not only a measure of doing more. If that's the measure, then, how much can the balloon expand before it bursts? So it's not just doing more, but remaining steady and being focused on pleasing Krishna while we're doing what we're doing. The qualitative, not necessarily quantitative. Including like the consciousness with which you address the impediment or impediments or the string of things that come your way that seem to monitor the consciousness, not just the result. Commonly, Krishna removes the, or reduces the impediments for the sincere devotee, for the purpose. But, sometimes it just makes the impediments greater and greater and greater. Does that indicate lack of sincerity of purpose on the part of the individual? Sometimes, my sense is when that happens, specific to individuals I'm thinking of, it's a sign that Krishna really wants that living entity to be with him. They see the sincerity of purpose, they see there's obstacles, and Krishna's taking away those obstacles. So that all that's left is the sincerity of purpose. And they're staying strong in that sincerity of purpose, despite the obstacles are getting bigger and bigger. That, what I just said is expressed in two sentences in relation to the Bali Maharaj narration where Vamana binds him even after taking everything. And Prabhupada explains that the devotees are put sometimes by the Lord in difficult situations at the same time, he gives the determination to see their way through those difficulties and go on the other side of the difficulty. So that determination, that's this intelligence that's being discussed in these verses. But it's not so easy, because your question specifically is, how do I measure, is it really circumstantial and I'm just, like, I'm caught by the circumstance, or is it my sincerity of purpose isn't so strong and therefore these obstacles come and come and come and come because my sincerity of purpose isn't sufficiently strong? Over time, the answer comes. And it's the relationship with Krishna that gives the answer. No one else? Okay. You have something else?
I'm just a... you said, like, you gave an example of a student focusing on, you know, I see sometimes students, they give a second preference to the devotional service, and because there's so much of things to do, let me finish this and then I'll come back to the devotional service. Not understanding that actually by performing chanting and giving, they gain the strength to actually do.
Well, it's not only students, it's the career and, you know, family and social and so many things.
So, yeah, so that lack of understanding the strength that one receives through the process of devotion service makes them give second preference to chanting and hearing. My question is that I'm not able to help understand.
How can I, as a concerned person, help somebody who's stuck in that space? That's your question. I deal with that all the time. And you know, you can't carry the person. You can encourage. And then it depends on their relationship with Krishna, how well they can hear and carry forward. So, purity is the force. That's the main thing, is not just how to, but purity. That's my answer to that question. And, you know, people are making choices. And during some stretch of time, that's the choice they're making. It came out in the discussion last night. You know, this one person, you know, about laziness and procrastination and all that. And it turns out that person's chanting 16 rounds and, you know, they're like... So you encourage. And what happens when you encourage is, not always, but often, there's an increase in enthusiasm, at least, you know, through association. And you can only extend and encourage according to your capacity. I would say much better to encourage than to push. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.